Lyme disease is a tough thing to live with, even on its own. Worse yet, it can come with co-infections, pathogens that occur along with Lyme disease. We're just starting to find out how many pathogens these little arachnids carry and pass on to their human hosts. Bartonella, Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever, just to name a few. On this Looking at Lyme podcast, we're going to meet a doctor with expertise in Lyme and the co-infections that accompany it. So, just how prevalent are co-infections? A recent American survey of over 3,000 patients with chronic Lyme disease found that over half had co-infections, with 30% reporting two or more. That's scary stuff. Dr. Thomas Moorcroft sees it all the time. He's a member of the ILADS Evidence-Based Lyme and Co-Infections Working Group. We reached him in Connecticut. Hello, Dr. Moorcroft. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
You're so welcome. Thanks for having me.
I'm calling you today from British Columbia, Canada, and I, along with many other people, saw you present at the International Lyme and Associated Diseases Conference over the past weekend, and it was a wonderful learning experience. And I know that your presentation focused a lot on co-infections, and I'm wondering if we can just start by you telling me, what are co-infections?
Sure. And yeah, thanks. I mean, it was a great conference, and I'm glad so many people were able to check it out. I think it's a really important question. Co-infection, really, at the simplest level, means that we have more than one infection at the same time. And within the Lyme disease community and people treating tick-borne illness, we often use the term co-infection kind of loosely, but when what we really mean is a tick-borne co-infection. Meaning, like, if you get bitten by an Ixoides tick, such as the deer tick, you could get Lyme disease, babesiosis, anaplasma, Borrelia miyamotoi, and things like that from this one tick bite. And so that, and, you know, the other thing that happens with co-infection would be we have concurrent co-infection. Like, maybe I have Lyme disease from the summer, then I go to school and I get strep throat infection. Those are, Lyme and strep are technically co-infections existing in your body at the same time, albeit they didn't come from the same tick bite. But typically when you're talking in the Lyme community, we say co-infection, we're typically talking about what you can get from the same tick bite.
Right. So when you get a tick bite, you can often have many different pathogens that enter your body at that time.
Right, exactly. And it's interesting because so much research is going into that, over the years. Really, in the last several years, we've started to see people revisit it. It's kind of like in the mid-90s, we had a lot of co-infection work, and then on 10, we had a little bit more, and then more recently, people have revisited it. And we're really finding that when we talk about Lyme disease, it comes from that the bite of an infected Ixoides tick. And as I was mentioning, some of the real big players that we can get would be babesiosis, and there's multiple species of that. Anaplasma, Borrelia miyamotoi, even Powassan virus. And I presented at ILAD several cases of people with known tick bites. They'd gotten one tick, and they got between 3 and 5 different pathogens from that single bite. And what's interesting, or it's unfortunate, but it's also interesting, and we need to be aware of, is that when we have more than one pathogen that we get from a tick bite, our symptoms often overlap a lot. And so that's where people say, oh, you can't possibly have all these things. I'm like, well, you can, because you actually have more than one infection from that tick bite. And when we get that overlap, sometimes it's almost like a synergy of symptoms. We start to see, complex presentations that are often confusing. And then the diagnostics, the laboratory testing can be more complicated. One of the points I love to bring up is that the testing that we've done is really validated for one pathogen in one host. So we artificially infect a laboratory animal with Lyme disease, and then we make sure that that test works, and then we use it in human beings. We haven't validated a test where you have Lyme and Babesia concurrently in the same host, and so we don't even know if the lab tests are going to be as accurate or not. but potentially more accurate. And so what we see in people is often you'll have a situation where one lab will be positive for a while, and then that'll get better, and then another one will become positive. And we're not, you know, clinically, it typically follows what's going on symptomatically, but it's, we don't have enough research, and I'd love to see researchers kind of dive into infecting an animal and really verify if our tests are effective or not.
And what is Bartonella, and what are some of the signs and symptoms?
Yeah, so Bartonella, that's like the can of worms, isn't it?
Sorry.
If you want to open Pandora's box, go there. So Bartonella is a bacterial infection. There has been some evidence that it can be found in ticks. If you, the same ticks that give Lyme, you know, transmit Lyme disease. If you look at Bartonella, one of the things that I find really interesting is that, or the research on what, when it's in ticks, is you find, some researchers find it and other researchers don't find it. And then, you know, there is some evidence that it, if it is in a tick, it can be transmitted to a mammal host, but there's not a lot of it. And what I tell people is most people know it as cat scratch disease or the causative agent of that. And so we found that you can get Bartonella from potentially from ticks, but also you can get it from a cat scratch or a cat bite. And that's kind of the more commonly known things in medicine. But then you also have this possibility of, you know, getting it from fleas or lice. And so I often will see in a classroom situation where lice will go through the classroom, and then there'll be a few children who develop OCD acutely or ADHD. We have acute onset of ADHD syndrome, like, you know, in five kids all out of the blue. And so it is one of these scenarios where we, you know, have to be aware that there is other transmission possible. And also not only just cat scratching bites, but the mites that are on cats can transmit it, and then also even potentially spiders. And so there's debate of whether it's truly a tick-borne co-infection or just a co-infection. And what I know is I see it in a lot of my patients, and when I see it, gets better. So that's the most important thing. Some of the typical symptoms that we see, in patients who have a foreign infection and also a Bartonella infection are things like the typical things like muscle pains and pains. We certainly see headache and, you know, fatigue. Some of the more specific things is we may see sort of neuropathic or numbness and tingling symptoms. They can often be either one-sided, or they could actually be migratory. So like in Lyme disease, you see a lot of migratory joint pain. You can actually see migratory neuropathy in Bartonella. Also, some people will get like muscle fasciculations that are kind of come and go. So it'll almost look like their muscles are moving under their skin, and even tremor. And lots of people have things like foot pain or heel pain. Some of the other things that are really those are very concerning, but things that really impact people on a day-to-day is a lot of cognitive impairment. You know, we have issues with executive function, impaired working memory, even like delays in processing speed, as well as some, you know, we see some mild anxiety and depression-type symptoms. And Bartonella, compared to some of these other infections, tends to also lead to weird, some of these oddities, such as like an OCD-type presentation, or even in people who, you know, they're previously very complacent, happy people, now they're having rage outbursts. And in children, we'll often see sort of acute personality changes or regression. So meaning, you know, they were reading, writing fine, or they were potty trained fine, and now they've gone back to, you know, as if they were 3 or 4 years younger. We also can see things, you know, like tic disorders, meaning, you know, verbal or auditory or physical tics, that almost like a Tourette's type of syndrome. And with the Bartonella also, it can appear very much like PANS and PANDAS, so the autoimmune encephalitis triggered by infections. And Bartonella is kind of a catch-22 because by itself it can look like PANS and not be PANS, or it can trigger PANS, so we would have both Bartonella symptoms and the PANS symptoms. And that's where you really get a lot of OCD, rage, and behavioral changes in our children.
So it sounds like you're really honing your clinical skills to help diagnose people. I'm just curious if there are other diagnostic tools that you use for detecting co-infections.
Yeah, I think you nailed it right on the head. It's got to be a clinical diagnosis. Yeah. We use laboratory data to support that. And, you know, there are definitely tests that can be done, and part of our testing is our physical exam. I think we often jump right into lab testing. One of the things is there are, you know, you can see fasciculations, you can see or hear ticks, and, you know, the eye blinking and the nose stuff. But there's also a thing called striae distensiae, and this is sort of like where you get stretch marks that are kind of purplish, to, you know, red-purple, and that's been shown to be potentially from Bartonella. They found Bartonella in these stretch marks. And if those are blanchable, meaning if I push on them and they get skin toned and then I remove my finger and it, you know, fills back up with blood, that's possibly a symptom that the stretch marks you're seeing are actually from Bartonella. And from the diagnostic perspective and, you know, from the lab work, I find that I do pretty well combining that clinical approach with the lab data, and antibody testing is primarily what we're looking at for Bartonella. Certainly, you know, you need to get it at the right lab, and you also have to know how to interpret the numbers. But antibodies really are going to be the one that gives us sort of the best outcome. We do have the opportunity to check for things like RNA and DNA. It's a little less likely to pick it up, but it's possible. I think one of the important parts to remember, both with Bartonella as well as many of our other co-infections, is there's significant literature supporting that there's initially a high false negative rate, and that these tests may not be positive until after several months of treatment, kind of going back to that question of, you know, how accurate are our labs when we are co-infected.
I wonder if you can tell me about the preceptorship program with the International Lyme and Associated Diseases Education Foundation.
Yeah, so the program's set up to give practitioners who have gone through the Lyme Fundamentals training program, that one-day course that gives them sort of the foundation, and most people feel like they've been drinking from a fire hose once they've done that course. And so, you know, really they get the book knowledge, they get the references of where to go, and then the training program is an opportunity for them to work side by side with a practicing clinician, an experienced clinician who has been vetted and, you know, from ILADS and really understands the fundamentals and what's being trained in the fundamentals of Lyme, and then allowing them to kind of come into their practice and shadow and really learn not only how to put the basics to use, but also to see how this particular clinician really kind of integrates it into their global practice. And so it's great because if you have a focus on pediatrics, or you have a focus on an older population, or if you want to use primarily medications, or if you're somebody who mixes herbals and medications, it's all there. You have those treatment opportunities, and you know, they offer a small stipend to help cover things. You know, but mostly it's the practitioner taking advantage of an opportunity to do a week or 2 weeks of training side by side with someone who's an expert in the field.
That sounds like a great way to put it all together.
That's how I got started. So, you know, it's like, because you know all this stuff, right? Like, you're starting to see these the patients come into your practice. You've gone to the conference. You get the basic information. You go to these really advanced, then you go to these advanced lectures. But the question is really, how do we put it together? And when, you know, medical training really is, we start with high-quality people, then we give them the book learning, and then we start to slowly over time work in the clinics with, you know, with different levels of supervision, eventually leading to the doctor practicing, you know, on their own and feeling confident. And so then when we get out and we go to a lot of these specialty trainings, it's a matter of, wow, what do I do now? And there's so many places, and the thing that I find holds people back the most is overwhelm. Where do you start? And so it's a really neat opportunity for people to see, hey, this is how one person puts it in you know, to work in their practice. So it's a place to start. And I was fortunate enough, you know, I did my 2 weeks, and one of the weeks was with one provider and one was with another provider, which I highly recommend people do. Most of the mentorship clinicians are always happy to help, even outside of the quote-unquote official time in the office. But the idea really being that, you know, work with two people that really stimulate, that practice kind of like you want to see how they implement it, so that then you can, you know, the provider can go back to their office and really know a place to start, so that it kind of takes some of that fear of getting going and the fear of doing the wrong thing for the patient. You can really start to gain your expertise, and it's in a way that we've all grown up in through medicine. So it's a nice program.
That's great. Did you hear any research at the ILAD Scientific Conference that got you excited?
Man, it's like so much research. It's like, you know, the updates on disulfiram, and I mean, I did an update on some of the Bartonella work that's been done. I think the thing that I really am impressed about is all of the, in the last 18 months, it's been like quantum leaps in Lyme persister work, Bartonella persister work, and really looking at how do we impact people who've been chronically sick for a long time, you know, in a way that's not 10 years from now, but in a way where, you know, we're really speeding things up. And I also really liked, you know, the focus, there was a big focus talking about the mental health side of things, because so many times, and I just got off the phone with my staff, and we were talking about somebody's like, well, should I come back in for an evaluation because they had a flare? And then their therapist's like, well, you're just hypochondriacal. And there was a big focus on mental health research with Dr. Bransfield and Linda Williams and Leo Shea. And it was like really talking about trying to create some data as well as, you know, teach people clinically of what to do, where we're looking at the whole person. Because I think often, you know, medicine, it's kind of like the physical part, and then you've got this mental health. And really what we learn with people in general, we should be thinking about, but definitely with people with chronic tick-borne illnesses, it's a full body, a full person experience, you know, body, mind, and spirit. And you've seen so much data come out on the scientific side, but the mental health has just been a conversation. And this year we really had a conversation about some of the mental health work, and that I think is really going to close the gap as well. So really excited about the mental health research and the validity of these patients coming in with their experiences, as well as some of the scientific breakthroughs that have really made a huge difference in our practice.
Well, I'm very thankful that you're willing to step forward and share all of your knowledge and experience with other physicians and healthcare workers and advocates like me. Thank you so much for your time, and hopefully we can speak again in the future.
All right. Yeah, you're very welcome. Thanks so much, too, for the opportunity. And, yeah, definitely look forward to chatting again soon.
That is Dr. Thomas Moorcroft, an expert on Lyme disease and co-infections. I was really impressed by the fact that he's willing to be mentored by other physicians, and it was great to learn about the preceptorship program. Dr. Moorcroft is a leader in the co-infection field, yet he is always willing to learn. And so are we here on Looking at Lyme. Thank you as well for listening, and stay safe in the outdoors.